You're listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast, your weekly podcast looking at all things Warhammer.
Hello and welcome to episode 116 of the Sprues and Brews podcast. My name is Dave and I'm joined once again by Matt.
Hello.
And Jay.
Good evening.
On this week's show, we're going to actually be delving into a bit of Necromunda, because Matt, I believe you've got a new book in your hands.
I have indeed, House of Artifice, detailing the Vansar. Very exciting. We'll also be talking about our top three things that we want from Santa this year, and, you know, they can be as silly as you like. Go all out this time.
Speaking of which, we have got some community choices later on in the show and also all of the latest news. Before we delve into the podcast contents, however, let's talk about what we've been doing in the hobby this week. I'm going to start us off this week because it's incredibly short. That is NAFL.
Oh, dang.
Is that a new football rule set?
Yeah. It's just with obviously Christmas is around the corner. Doing a lot for that.
Isn't it? Sorry, yeah. That snuck up on us.
Yeah, it does. So I've been quite busy. Also still adjusting to times with a newborn. So I just haven't really had a chance to sit down and paint anything, really, which is a shame because I've been really chomping at the bit to paint some World Eaters. So
You've managed to play some remote Warhammer, though, haven't you?
This is true. So myself and Jay only last night went onto Tabletop Simulator and had a game of AOS. And my days, I forgot how much I love Warhammer. it really filled the void of rolling dice. It was a really good game, wasn't it, Jay?
It was the first game of Age of Sigmar we've had since the Sylvaneth fought the Uruks in the garden.
Yeah, Gardenhammer.
Gardenhammer. That was like, what, in July or something? I can't remember now.
Time is just, it's just that. Can't comprehend it. So I played Bone Reapers because that's sort of my current Age of Sigmar project. Jay, you played as the Lumineth, of which we know you love your elves. What was the? It was Scorched Earth, wasn't it? The scenario.
Scorched Earth from the General's Handbook 2020. So you've got four objectives in each player's territory. You face off in the traditional. You've got a 12-inch, is it 15-inch deployment zone. I think you start 9 inches away from enemy territory. And then you basically get a point at the end of every one of your turns for each objective you control. If you control one of the opponent's objectives, you can raise it instead, as long as there's not an enemy hero nearby. Ah, as I just said that, Dave, there was an enemy hero nearby, the one I raised.
Oh, yeah. Jay cheated.
So I wouldn't have been able to raise that one. I would have got, to be fair, I only got 1 point for it anyway, because you rolled a D3, so.
Let's be honest. I mean, we've not played Warhammer for a long time, never mind Age of Sigmar. So I think we can be forgiven for cheating a little bit. But it was the first time I'd used the Bone Reapers. I'm really looking forward to obviously using them for reals. But it was a really fun game. I think, again, dice rolls, you know, the same in the virtual world as they are on the real world for me. And some of my dice rolls were pretty poor while Jay was getting mortal wounds left, right and centre. But the Bone Reapers feel like a really fun army to play, a bit different than armies I've played before. I mean, I've been playing a lot of my Iron Jaws. They just love smashing things. I think you've got to be a little bit more strategic with the Bone Reapers, with synergies with like the Harvester and stuff.
Do you enjoy playing with them?
They're immune to Battle Shock is mental.
Yeah, I didn't have to worry about a lot of your bravery shenanigans. Which is great. Hey, but yes, Matt, I did really enjoy using them. I really want to get them painted, and hopefully next year we'll be able to have a game.
Can you imagine that? Warhammer around a table again.
The only other bit of Warhammer I've done this week is after weeks of you guys kind of going on about audiobooks and audio dramas, I finally decided to give an audio drama a go. So I started listening to Realm Slayer on Audible. And it's really good. I'm really enjoying it. Kudos to the actors that do the voiceovers. They really put a lot of effort into it.
You've got to keep up with Brian Blessed in that, though, haven't you?
I know, you really do. You really do. So, yeah, I'm really enjoying it. I'm only maybe an hour in, not very far at all. Really enjoy it. I'd much prefer it to audiobooks, I think. Although, after listening to this, I might give an audiobook a go again. But yeah, really enjoyed it after you guys have kind of been saying how good they are. Jay, what have you been up to in the hobby this week?
Well, on the audiobook front, then, Dave, I did finish Birth of the Imperium, Valdor, Birth of the Imperium. That was good. I know the... Is it in the news this week, Matt, or the news last week with the next Siege of Terror book being announced?
Last week's, yes. That's January, I believe it's up for pre-order.
Yeah, so I haven't got... I can't listen to that just yet. So I have picked up the sequel to the Watchers of the Throne. Chris, wait. It's the one where... It's the sequel to the book where Gilliman arrives on Terror. There's a battle at Lion's Gate. It's got the... Valerian, is it? And Aleia, the custodian, and the Sister of Silence.
Yeah.
So I've started listening to that. It's pretty good. I like custodians, and it's good because it's set in the current, you know, they're just launching the Indomitus Crusade. So, it's nice to read about things that have happened in the past. It's also good to read about things that are happening now in the 40K universe setting. So yeah, I'm on that. On the painting front, I had hoped to get the Imperial Fist Terminators finished this week, but I just haven't. So I'm going to try and get them finished for next week instead. I finished off the bases on the Dwarfs for the Blood Bowl team, so they're done now. And I have today painted, I'm almost there, it's like 90-odd% now finished, the Alarith Stoneheart, the Avelonor, the Stoneheart King, which is the big, like... character battle cattle for the Lumina Realm Lords.
He looks so good, Jay.
Oh yeah, cheers, Matt. He's nearly there. I've just got the base and the banners to finish on that guy. And I have also this afternoon put some more paint onto the Wood Elf Blood Bowl team. So they're at the stage now where all the base colours are on all the models. They just need the washes on them now. So that'll be the plan for the rest of this week. And then that's two Blood Bowl teams then hopefully ready for a tournament in the new year, perhaps.
Well. Yeah, sounds really good.
And that's me, yeah.
Excellent stuff. I like how you got back on the Luminef after our game last night. Probably inspired you.
it definitely did. I want to get them finished. I've got like a 1,000-point list, which is the one I used yesterday. I don't know whether I'll change that much. And then I've also got a 2,000-point list in mind, because I'm conscious that if, you know, the Purple Sparkle Unicorns start running tournaments again into next year, I want to take the Luminef, really. So I need to get 2,000 points ready. I don't know how good the 2,000 point list is that I've written, but because I'm not a chance to actually practice with it, but it's got a lot of the models in that I like, including Teclis and Avelinor. So
nice.
That's the most important thing. Get the models in that you like.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Matt, what have you been up to in the hobby this week?
Well, I managed to finish the Terminators, my Sons of Horus. Really happy with how they turned out. And I was going to then paint the rest of my Sons of Horus to get up to 1,000 points. But I've been playing Cyberpunk 77. I'm about 30 hours into it, I'm not going to lie. So, but I am going to try and get some paint on these guys after the podcast. I'm hoping to... Plan was get these guys done by Christmas. And then painting schedule is free, ready for whatever comes out in January.
I wonder what could be coming out in January that Matt would want to free up his painting schedule for.
Yeah. Not much hobby this week, but I think we're going to have a game of AOS on TTS as well, aren't we?
Yeah, you're wanting to take a 2K list of big stompy giants.
Yeah, we had that one game with the Sons of Baymat, didn't we? In the week of no lockdown that we had, it seems. I'm looking forward to trying a big 2,000 point list with all the giants, just to see how they all do.
Excellent stuff. Right, that wraps up our introduction to this week's podcast. We've got plenty to get through, so we're going to come right back with the news. So what do we have in this week's news, Matt?
Well, as Christmas is on the horizon, we don't have any pre-orders this week because a week on Saturday is Boxing Day. So... But the shops won't be closed because the last couple of years, Games Workshop always had a kind of special model out from, it's normally like Boxing Day till like the start of January, isn't it? That little window. We normally go and pick it up on the New Year open day, don't we? Which unfortunately I don't think will be on this year. But this year it is Gorzag, Gitstomper and Nikit. So this is an Orc War Boss based on a metal one that they brought out at the time of Gorkamorka, depicting pretty much the orc with a kind of like leather jacket on the front of the Gorkamorka cover. And yeah, it's a really nice model and comes with a Gretchen now as well. And yeah, I have fond memories of Gorkamorka. I've said on this podcast before, it's one of my favourite old school games that GW did. So I'll definitely be picking up this guy to add to my orc army. How about you guys? Are you tempted by this one?
Absolutely. I think I'll definitely be getting him. I don't have an orc army, but he looks really fun to paint. And I love the pose of both him and the little grot as well. So definitely for me.
And every time I see these new orc models, I think, you know what? With the Crusade system, you could easily do something along the lines of Gorkamorka with a 1,000-point Crusade force.
Yeah. I think, did we at one stage consider all three of us getting a tiny orc army and having some sort of
orc campaign?
Yeah. That'd have been really good. I really enjoyed that.
I think we should do that. I think we should keep an eye out to see if anything orky happens on Games Workshop next year, because I think that'd be fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this guy's available in Warhammer stores the 26th to the 3rd of January. And then at some undisclosed point in the future, it'll be available on the Games Workshop website. However, it's probably worth bearing in mind that a lot of the previous limited run models they've done like that, you're talking like 120-day wait to get it. I still haven't got the Catechin model like they did earlier in the summer. And it's not long ago that the Sistra battle came. So, yeah, if you don't get it in store the day it's out, you're probably waiting a while, because it's probably sitting in Games Workshop's production queue for a couple of months.
Yeah.
But at least, if you do miss out on the stores, at least you can order one, which is a lot better than a lot of these limited editions in the past, where if you couldn't get it, you were out of luck.
Tough. Yeah.
So I much prefer that. It's a nice change. And yeah, that's it for new models, really. On Saturday, we've got Armies on Parade, the award ceremony. So over the last few months, they've been asking people to send in their pictures of their Armies on Parade boards. They've judged them all and they'll be giving out the prizes and showing them all off on a special show on Warhammer TV on Saturday. So again, that's really nice. Again, that kind of thing would traditionally be done in the stores, and it's the kind of thing that you really can't do in stores at the moment. Yeah. So nice for the winners to get a bit of recognition on Warhammer TV, and I assume they'll still send out all the trophies and prizes and stuff, so that should be worth watching and probably good for some inspiration. I've always fancied doing one, I just don't know where I'd store it.
Yeah, that's always a problem. No, I think it's really nice. I think it's a really nice thing to do, and I think I'll give that a watch on Saturday.
Yeah, definitely. And then we've had a few little sneaky bits of news. So there's been some new Slaanesh units revealed that Jay alluded to earlier in the show. Because we know Slaanesh is coming, we know Zygvold's coming, and they showed off a few units. But some people notice, in the background of a lot of the shots on the Zygvold trailer, there were some other kind of shadowy shapes. Obviously, all the contents of Diachasm and new Slaanesh units as well. So, myself included, I wonder if there's going to be like light infantry archers. Well, guess what? There are. Bliss Barbs are being added to the Slaanesh range. They are, I'd say, kind of Arabic-based kind of models with kind of baggy trousers and cool kind of, I suppose, stylings that we haven't seen in any other Age of Sigmar races before. The Diachasm models come with really nice kind of sculpted sand bases. And I'm thinking of doing my entire Mortals army. I think they'd look really good with the kind of pinks and purples against the sand.
Yeah, I think that'd look really good.
They remind me of, do you know when we saw the different Chaos Warcry factions? Mm. They look like a really cool Warcry faction. Like they have their distinct sort of mortal look to them, yeah.
Well, in the Warcry supplement book is where we've seen all these models. And if the faction is called Slaanesh Sybarites, so that's presumably going to be the name of the battle tome if they get one. Obviously, not guaranteed it's going to get a battle tome straight away, but that seems to be the name of the sub-faction. So you've got archers on foot. They also have mounted archers, which I assume are on Seekers, and then a close combat variant that are mounted. And then we've also seen the Slangors shown off as well, so they're going to be a proper unit. So really, really excited. It's basically, if you like the models from the Red Pageant, then you're going to be all over these. We haven't actually seen any models. There's little snippets that we've got. So I imagine that we'll get a full reveal of them maybe over Christmas. Games Workshop sometimes do a bit of a teaser reveal on Christmas Day, don't they?
They do love their Christmas themed video. I remember the Nurgle tree one. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Now, that's not the only thing that's in this Warcry book. There are some pictures of Chaos Warriors who look different than the ones we've already got. Now, obviously, they brought out a new Stark collecting Slaves to Darkness with kind of monopose Chaos Warriors that were amazing compared to the old ones, weren't they?
They were.
Now, there's some variants in the Warcry book, such as Chaos Warriors with halberds, that you haven't actually been able to make off a plastic sprue for years. So perhaps at some point we're also going to get a new Warrior sprue.
Are Chosen, Chaos Chosen, are they plastic or fine cast?
I believe they're fine cast, but I might be wrong.
Because they have the big halberd type weapons, don't they? The Chosen used to.
They do. Well, Chosen are in there as a unit, and then there's a little slither of pictures. There's a couple of helmets that look different.
Right.
And then, yeah, a Warrior with a halberd. It looks more in line with the recent ones they did in that Start Collecting box. So
right.
That'll be interesting if they get released as well. So, yeah, some cool stuff in there. We also saw the first gameplay trailer for Darktide, the new 40k team-based shooter. And, oh boy, it looks amazing.
It does look cool. The Ogryn looks ace. And the Warrior Priest.
Oh, it looks so fun. So, obviously, if you played Vermintide, think that. Take out the Skaven. Insert a load of traitor guardsmen.
I mean, we're big fans of Vermintide. I can't wait for this. I think it's going to be ace.
Yeah, I don't think it's got a release date, has it, outside of at some
2021.
Point.
Yeah. Yeah, but you can go onto the website for news and updates. So, and you know, so the I don't know when it's going to come out, but that'll be the place to check, I guess.
Yeah, and I think it's PC and next-gen consoles, isn't it?
PC and Xbox.
Not PlayStation.
XS series or whatever it is.
Ah, interesting. So, yeah, okay. We've got that covered, and hopefully closer to the time we'll be able to get some games in of that, because I think that'd be great fun. And then final bit of news that we've got today, the 40k app has been updated. They have added the much anticipated Battle Forge army builder kind of program. Now, you've had a bit of a play with this, haven't you, Dave?
I like it. I really like the presentation. I mean, I've liked the presentation of the app from day one. It's just a shame that there were so many issues with it, but I really like its presentation. I did notice a few issues, which, to be fair, have been updated and changed today. So in the space of a week, they've released Battleford and they've updated it. So I think that's, you know, that's kudos to them, really.
Yeah, but they've also addressed one of the main criticisms of it. So for new codexes, you have to buy the codex to get the full rules for those units. They have changed the mind on that a little bit now. You can see every single unit in the game as soon as the codex comes out. You just don't get the full ability. So all the stat lines and weapons profiles. So if you're playing someone, you can see what weapons they've got, what stat line they've got. You won't be able to see the kind of like army special rules related to that. But I think that's a really nice compromise.
That's the same as Age of Sigmar, isn't it? The army app for Age of Sigmar. You can see all the war scrolls, but you can't see the allegiance abilities.
Yeah, I think any special rules that the units have, you won't see either. Just the kind of stat lines.
Right. Right, okay.
But still better than not seeing any.
Yeah, I
like it. I've played around with a couple of lists on there, and now that I can actually add units to make full detachments, it's really good. There's a couple of things that like seem to be a little hidden away. I haven't really tested it today to see if they're like choosing your psychic powers is a little bit more straightforward and making your warlord. But no, I like it, and I just look forward to what else they're going to add to it.
Mm.
Fantastic. That brings us to the end of this week's news. We have got our main feature coming right up. Matt, what is the latest book in your hands?
So we were lucky enough to get a hold of House of Artifice for Necromunda a little bit early from our friends at Games Workshop. And it seems like only yesterday I was talking about the House Orlok book. But no, Vansar have got their moment in the spotlight. Massively expanding all the options they had from Gangs of the Underhive. So we mentioned this before, these are kind of the equivalent of a codex in 40k, where it takes the I think it was only two pages in Gangs of the Underhive that kind of detailed how you took your gang, and has blown it up into a massive book detailing all the lore, loads more options for them, and then loads of kind of customizability upgrades and all the fun kind of RPG style stuff that they've injected into Necromunda in this new edition. And yeah, they're really, really fun. You've picked up the Goliath one, haven't you? You've not picked up the Orlok one, have you, Dave?
I haven't. No, I'm tempted because I quite like the Orlocks and I quite like the Enforcers. I'm trying to choose one between the two to get as like a second band. But I have got the Goliath one, and it's a fantastic read. It's a really, really good book. Like you say, it's just like a codex.
Yeah, it really is. And one of my favourite things with these is how they've expanded on the lore. So in this book, we find out that a colony ship called the Vansar was headed to colonise a planet. Unfortunately, it crash-landed on Necromunda, which isn't the greatest place to crash-land because it was a bit just a desolate wasteland at that time. A lot of the crew died. However, crucially, the STC on board the ship survived the crash. So hundreds of years later, various scavengers pull the ship apart. The survivors of the crash become a gang, for want of a better word, and became traders within the desert outside the hives, trading gear they created using the STC. As they got more powerful and more credits, they then moved secretly this STC into the Underhive and became quite a force for creating technology and weapons. Now, nobody else on the planet knew that they had this STC and just assumed that they were, you know, making it with their bare hands, when really they had a secret 3D printer in the basement.
I've seen it like a picture, I don't know if it's some artwork of the book of the STC, sort of like in a big like dome or sphere thing. Mm.
Yeah, it's really cool, and they've been tinkering with this. They've been tinkering with Xenos technology. The Adeptus Mechanicus would not approve at all. However, Lord Howlmore's covering it up because, you know, they're making lots of guns and bringing lots of money into Necromunda, so he's turning a blind eye to it. And he potentially doesn't know the true story about this STC either. And that's essentially what the gang does. It's kind of, if you think a technologically based Dark Angels, you've got the kind of like elite inner sanctum who know about the STC and know all the secrets about it. And then you've got the various workers and scavengers and stuff on the outside who don't maybe know all the details. There's one downside to this, though. Due to the fact that, you know, the ship dropped out of orbit, the STC is unfortunately damaged and is leaking radiation. Meaning that the Vansar have got incredibly short lives because they're just all fall into radiation sickness. I
was going to say, is their life expectancy still shorter than a regular hiver in the Necromunda?
Well, this is it. You don't expect to last long in Necromunda anyway. So radiation sickness or a slugger to the back of your head, you know, they're your options, aren't you? Mm. They've managed to move this STC a couple of times, and the final place they've moved it to is underneath the main space fort, because the radiation signature of ships taking off and landing is disguising the energy signature of the STC leaking itself. Unfortunately, it started doing weird things and has embedded itself into the kind of like energy network of the planet, so they don't think they can move it again. And if anyone does catch wind, it's all going to end in tears when there's a big fight over this STC directly underneath the main spaceport. You know, what could possibly go wrong if there's a stray bullet there? I really enjoyed reading that because it does flesh out the gang. And if you are, I think one of the things they've pushed recently is the more kind of RPG element and have an arbiter running the campaign. And it really lets you play to how the gang feels in the lore.
Yeah.
I think That's a really kind of nice thing they've added to the game. So fleshing it out from a couple of pages in the main rulebook is a huge thing. Going on to the gang itself, they have massively expanded this. Like I say, in the main rulebook, it was just two pages. They have given you loads more options now. So a lot of the old options are still there. They haven't changed any stat lines. They haven't changed any points. A lot of people thought that they'd maybe adjust the ballistic skill of Vansar because they are very, very good at shooting. They haven't adjusted that and they haven't adjusted the points. If anything, they've given them more weapon options. And I think they really want to kind of drive home that these are the super elite shooty army. So you can have a fully tooled out leader with a las cannon initially in your gang if you want to. And that a lot of people have kind of mentioned on me a post that I put up about this that Vansar seem really, really powerful with all these weapon options. I think you're only going to have 1,000 credits to start your gang, so you're not going to have a massive gang if you do go heavy into those weapons. And if you have any casualties, suddenly you are fighting for survival then. Yeah. So you can certainly go, you know, toting all the heavy weapons, but it's going to cost you, which again fits the kind of theme that this is an elite, you know, spec ops even kind of force. So the leader hasn't changed a great deal. The champions changed a little bit. There's more options they can take. The new champion they've added, the Archaeotech, is really, really cool. He's an interesting champion. So in games of Necromunda, normally your champions, the main advantage of him is that he can issue a group order. So him and a couple of gangers can make one action at the same time because, you know, actions are quite risky in Necromunda. You're just going to maximize what you can do. The Archaeotech's a bit different in that he can't issue a group activation. Instead of that, he can get Cyber Technica for free. So if you've played Deus Ex, Cyberpunk, all the stuff that's convenient out around about the same time as this, the Archaeotechs can essentially replace their organic body parts with cybernetic replacements, which is really cool. So there's stuff like he can have synthetic legs where he doesn't have any movement penalties for going up terrain. He can replace his eyeballs, so he's got targeting reticules and all sorts of cool stuff like that. Mm. He can take a big servo spider arm to give him more attacks in close combat. Oh. Really, really fun, really, really customizable. So, yeah, I think that's going to be a little bit of fun to play with. And the Archaeotechs get one for free when you add him to the gang, and it's half price when you add any additional ones to him. What's really fun with a Cybernetica, anyone in your gang can have them if you want. When they level up or when they take an injury, you can choose to take him to the dock and basically trick him out with some cybernetic upgrades.
Cool, that sounds cool.
Yeah, so it's stuff like that where they've added, it just adds a load more kind of like, I suppose, feel to the army, doesn't it? It's a bit different than what's come before. You know, I imagine when we get to Cawdor, we might see, I don't know, something similar, but with like religious prayers that they've got because they all worship the Emperor and are kind of imitating the custodians, aren't they?
They're about as far from custodians as you can get. But you're right, in their heads, they're custodians.
Yeah, so yeah.
I mean,
so
they've even got some of the, like, spears, haven't they?
They do. They literally have a spear with a bolter strapped to it because they saw a custodian with it once.
So cool. Do you know what I'd like, actually? It'd be cool. Like you say, they're pushing the narrative of Necromunda and fleshing out the universe, which is awesome. But isn't Necromunda a recruitment world for the Imperial Fists?
It is indeed, yeah.
And they recruit gangers, don't they? It'd be really cool if you could sort of, like, promote a guy into a neophyte for the Imperial Fists.
So what in previous supplements they've had in the past, I forget the name of the book now, but there was a magazine that they did alongside White Dwarf that had a lot of specialist game content, and you could have stuff like that where a guy would get headhunted into the Imperial Guard and essentially become a Space Marine scout.
Oh man.
So, yeah, the stuff like that is really, really fun. And, yeah, I really like the Cybertechnica stuff. There's no bad choices there. They are going to cost you credits. And, again, you're running on an already expensive gang. But you've got all the coolest toys in town. The other new unit, which is from the same plastic frame, is the Vansar Neotech. So these are the hot-headed youths who have joined the gang and they're like, oh, wow, look at all this awesome gear that I've got. Jump on a hoverboard and go causing havoc in the Underhive. Exactly. They're not cheap. Again, they start at 70 credits. So, you know, that's the equivalent of a couple of gangers and any other gang.
That's a Cawdor gang, isn't it?
Pretty much, yeah. But they get some really cool stuff. So with the hoverboard, they can they get +2 to their movement. They don't get any penalty for moving across terrain. They can move up and down levels freely, and they can never fall over. Can't go over water, no. So, yeah, they're really, really mobile and... yeah, I think they'll be really quick at like pinning down enemy units while your heavy gunners get into position. They can also do like a flyby attack, which is a unique action that they gain where they get to make a move and a single model that they cross over during that move, they get a single attack on them with knockback. So say if there's somebody walking across a gantry. These guys just speed over them with a hoverboard and knock them off the side.
That's ace. Did they get reanimation protocols as well?
Unfortunately not, even if it does look a bit necrony. So yeah, the main gangers, they haven't changed much. They previously, when you made your gang, one of them could take a special weapon, and then additional guys could then take special weapons. That's changed a little bit. When you make your gang, one can be a specialist, and he can take special or heavy weapons. So initially, one of your gangers, you can just take like a plasma cannon or something. Again, that's going to run very expensive, but you can do if you want to. And then as the guys level up, you can then give them heavy weapons as well. So it's really leaning into the low model count with lots of big guns kind of vibe, which I think fits. Some people have grumbled at that. Put it this way, you don't need a load of models to play Vansar anymore.
No, you don't.
And then Juve still exists for your 35 credit option. So if you do want to go bare bones, you can do. But I think you really want to play into the strengths of Vansar by having, yeah, maybe an elite force with heavy weapons. I think it'd be really fun. We get a new exotic beast, the Cyber Arachnid. So if you imagine the combination of a spider, some cyber technology and abominable intelligence and put it all together into a horrific, scuttling AI beastie. Yeah, that's the Cyber Arachnid. 75 credits. It's got a webber on it, so it can kind of web up enemy combatants. And each of your champions or your leader can take between two or three of these Cyber Arachnids, depending on what they are. All the other gangs, their exotic beasts have come on the plastic frame. Unfortunately for the Vansar, they're not. I assume it's probably going to be a Forge World kit, because they're going to be quite intricate and fragile, I imagine, to do in plastic.
Yeah.
Being big, scuttly monster, spider, robot things. But yeah, that's pretty cool. And that's it for kind of new units in the army list. As with the other books, we get a full list of hangers-on and brutes. Not going to go through the ones that we already know about, but there's a few cool new additions. So Cogitator Core Servitors can be taken for 100 credits by Vansar gangs. These are essentially servitors wired into the defense systems. So if, say, your Goliaths were attacking my Vansar Dave, mm-hmm. I could take the Core Servitor for 100 credits, and he can control the lights, he can set up mines, he can control all the terminals, make the doors more difficult to open. And again, that seems really fun for your high-tech faction, basically having some kind of like, you know, hacker that's shutting down all your attempts to get into the base.
Yeah, yeah, that's cool. I like that. And I could imagine, like, with your Zone Mortalis, Matt, if you wanted to like visually represent that, you could do some cool stuff with servitors like patched into the terminals and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's really cool. You can also get a tech merchant. Any gang can take this for 80 credits, but Vansar get it for 40. And this guy's basically a black market arms dealer who can make it easier for your guys to find black market or rare or illegal weapons. So normally you've got to do a roll at the end of the game to see kind of what rarity of weapons you can find. This guy makes it easier for you. And he also reduced the cost of stuff that you buy in the trading house by D3 times 10 credits to a minimum of 20 credits. So in two games, this guy's got your money back if you're going to be buying guns, which, let's face it, for Vansar, you probably are going to be buying some guns.
Yeah, those look great, so, yeah.
So for 40 credits, he seems like a no-brainer for Vansar. And for 80 credits, not a bad choice for you, the gangs, if you want to try and get some rare and illegal weaponry. And then the final new addition to that segment is the Data Scrivener. This is like a counter-hacker. So this is the kind of counter to the servitor. He makes it easier for you to open those doors and terminals and stuff.
Right.
So, and it's only 20 credits and can be taken by any gang.
Okay.
So presumably we'll have Forge World models coming out for all those as well. And they seem really, really fun. And yeah, with Cyberpunk coming out pretty much the same week as this, there's lots of the same kind of vibe going on here. They can take a lot of the generic normal stuff that we've seen before. We also get a new brute. So all the gangs have got a brute of some sort. The Vansar get the Arachnorig, which is kind of the combination of, I don't know, if a Dreadnought and Dr. Octopus had a baby. So big, heavy, mechanical kind of augmented suit that they wear on the back with forearms that can give them close combat weapons or guns. Your Vansar, you're going to go guns, aren't you? Yeah. It can also do two simple shoot actions per turn. So it can just kind of stand there and blast things away. It's 240 credits, so again, it's super expensive, and it gets even more expensive if you give it guns. This thing's like pushing 400 credits if it's fully tricked out. But it's going to look really cool and probably put out a lot of pain. But again, with Vansar, a lot of this stuff is you're going to have an awesome looking army, but all your eggs in one basket. If you start losing bodies, then it's all going to go downhill really quickly. So we'll skip through a lot of the other bits because it's stuff we've seen before. House agents, bounty hunters, all that kind of stuff you have access to. We also get some new allegiances added into the book. So we've seen these in all the House of Books so far. And essentially, you can ally yourself with one kind of minor house who we've seen the Slavers Guild. We've seen, various different organizations that can help your gang in some way. But there's downsides to it as well. So you've got to weigh up. Out of these, which ones you want to align yourself with, if any of them. The new ones in this book are the Promethium Guild. So these are the guys in charge of energy and Promethium within Necromunda. That ties quite well with the Vansar. Essentially, it stops your plasma and flame weapons from being scarce. And any weapons that didn't have the scarce trait become plentiful. So it's going to make it a lot easier to reload those plasma based weapons, which, let's face it, again, as Vansar, you're going to be packing. They seem a really, really, really good choice for them. However, they will take a cut of credits at the end of the game. So you've got to weigh up whether actually they're going to bankrupt you because they're taking all your credits, but you've got the benefit of, additional ammo for your plasma weapons. We've got the Imperial Imposters. So these are a criminal organization who can, during the course of a campaign, people broadly fall into outlaws and kind of lawful gangs. The Imperial Imposters can manipulate that so they can stop one side from going to the opposite faction if you want to try and game the system for whatever reasons. So they're quite interesting, kind of an espionage kind of gang. They also take a Master Charlatan, who's kind of a cool swashbuckling assassin type. So they seem really cool. And then finally, we've got House Catalyst, who are in charge of brokering deals between the different gangs. They can make people disappear by falsifying records. They do all the, if you think the kind of, what were they called? The House of Many Faces, the Assassin's Guild at a Game of Thrones, that kind of vibe. If you were playing a game with me, Dave, and I had one of my guys taken a prisoner at the end of the game, House Catalyst can make sure that all his records are deleted, so you can't get any money by selling him because he's a nobody. That's pretty cool. They also bring the Carnival of Death to battle with them, which is basically a mental assassin clown. So think like an Imperium Harlequin and a mindless mind flayed who just goes mental and charges into things. Really, really cool. Mastercrafted long rifle and power sword. They're amazing. However, there's a downside that at the end of each game, there's a chance that one of your juves gets taken off and lobotomized. So high risk, high reward kind of band. I really like them. The artwork's amazing. Who cares if a couple of juves die?
So
it's a really fun stuff. We also get the kind of the usual stuff you'd get in there, like the house favors and the subplots. You get a new skill tree, which is all technologically based. And weaponsmith's a really cool one. It has a similar trait to the Promethium Guild, where your scarce weapons lose it. Ones without scarce becomes plentiful. So again, makes it really, really kind of efficient on your heavy weapons. We get the full Cybernetica tree, so loads of stuff to play with that. Essentially, if your guy gets wounded during a battle, you can get rid of that downside by giving him a cyber upgrade. He does have to sit at a battle load to recover from the operation because, having your brain removed and replaced with a CPU is quite an invasive medical procedure, apparently. We also see Vansar Terrain. So this is something we've seen in all the other books. Sadly, we haven't seen any resin kits for these. So I think that maybe encouraging people to scratch build these. I'd really like to see kind of terrain packs come out for each of the houses. But I do understand that's probably niche even for a Forge World kit.
Yeah.
And then, we get some fun scenarios as well. So Deus Ex Machina. There is a rogue AI that's possessed one of your guys, and essentially over the course of the battle, you're trying to recover this rogue AI and disappear with it. And the other scenario is last rites for the machine. This is essentially your a fading legend, a Vansar hero who's got up to 400 credits worth of gear, who wants to retire and go out in a blaze of glory. The enemy team has a bounty hunter or similar who's there to take him out. And basically, it's the, if you think cinematic film, this is the final shootout where the hero goes down blazing to the bounty hunter.
That's cool. That's very cinematic.
Yeah, so really fun stuff. And a lot of these scenarios that they've put in these books are kind of for cool one-off missions where, you know, the Arbiter comes up with a storyline, and it's just a nice way to, I don't know, your guy who's retiring may as well go out guns blazing, hadn't he?
Yeah.
So, yeah, really, really like this book. All the books have been really, really fun so far. I think they've really fleshed out the game and given you lots more options. And, yeah, built on the narrative side of it. And I think the game is in a much better place than it was with just Gangs of the Underhive, because there was a point where Necromunda forces were looking very samey, where now you've got a lot of customization, haven't you?
Which is, I think, what the game's about, isn't it? You want to be mixing and matching weapons and making unique characters, naming them, giving them a backstory, and then as the games progress, you upgrade them and stuff. It's much more individual than, you know, 40K or Kill Team or anything like that.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, I highly recommend all the House of books, and can't wait for the last two to come out. And then I suppose the question is then, what does the future hold for Necromunda? There's lots of places they could go. Old supplemental factions they've visited in the past, like the Spires and the Ratskins. Or could they create entirely new stuff? I think that'd be quite exciting.
Didn't we see some like concept artwork of outside the hive in like the Ash Wastes or whatever it was called?
We did indeed. And I think they even had some kind of beasties that we're riding on. So I think that'd be interesting. Even if they did a whole supplement based in the Ash Wastelands around and have some, you know, vehicles have always been teased in the past. And, you know, Gorkamorka itself was based on Necromunda and early concept ideas for having vehicles and battles in the wasteland. So, yeah, I think there's lots of places they can go with Necromunda. And the game has been really, really well supported pretty much since that second edition box came out.
Yeah. Brilliant. Matt, you've done a full written and video review over on spruceandbrews.com, so I will make sure the links are in the podcast description. But yeah, sounds like a really fun book. I can't say how much I love the Goliath one, and I definitely want to pick up some of the other ones, even if it's just to read them. That brings us to the end of our main feature for this week's show, but we do have our top three, and that is coming up next. So for this week's top three, we're going to be discussing the top three things we'd like from Santa. So as Matt alluded to at the beginning of the podcast, we might go a little bit bonkers here. We might go a little bit off track, but it should be a really fun top three. And I'm going to start us off this week, and I'm going to be heading over to Forge World, because Forge World is home to lots of expensive goodies that I would love Santa to bring to me. So for my third choice, weighing in at £150, the Sakaran Assault Force. So this is a it's a bundle really, so it's a bit cheating, but it contains two Sakarian tanks. Now I've seen a couple of battle reports of these things in, and they're good for Heresy, for you know we're going to be playing a lot of that in the new year, and 40K as well. They're incredible looking tanks, and they're armed with auto cannons and las cannons, and you get two of them for £150. That's a bargain, guys. An absolute bargain. Not very World Eater-ish, but I don't know.
The World Eaters still have tanks, though.
That's true. Still,
they like to throw tanks at things.
You can still please the Blood God by shooting things rather than chopping things.
That's absolutely true.
That so, meme comes to mind. Drive me closer so I can hit him with my chainsaw.
So yeah, I think this is a really cool bundle, and I'd love for Santa to put this in my stocking. Matt, what is your third choice?
Well, you know when you sat there and like, oh, I've run out of that paint. That's really annoying. You're going to nip down the shop and then you come back with that £200 worth of Games Workshop stuff because that's what happens. Well, yeah, you could solve that problem by just having a complete Citadel paint rack fully stocked with all the paints, all the spray cans, all the paint brushes, all the basing materials, basically a mini Games Workshop within your hobby room. Can't say no to that.
That sounds cool. Do you know, as you were saying that, Matt, I'll tell you what would also be really cool, a Warhammer Paint subscription.
Yeah.
So like a renewable of
that'd
your favourite paint. Black Templar, Lead Belcher, your Wraithbone sprays.
Like when the milkman comes, it's just like a supply drop of paints.
A little box of paint, that'd be amazing. Games Workshop, get on that now. We'd all subscribe.
Yeah, that's awesome. Jay, what is your third choice?
So my third choice, so me and Matt were looking at some stuff the other day on Forge World as well. And we were just scrolling through looking at all the different units and models and things to do. And then we started looking at the Solar Auxilia. I would like a 3,000-point Solar Auxilia armor, please. I've worked it out. It comes to about £2,400. But you'll get free shipping with that, so, you know.
It might even be next-day delivery.
Yeah.
They are gorgeous models, but they are hellishly expensive, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to see, like, next time we go to Warhammer World, I need to find these models because I've never looked at them closely before. Like, all like steampunk clockwork armor. They've all got like the gears and cogs in the backpack showing. And there's actually quite a varied range. You've got like the elites, the normal grunts, you've got the command squads with all different options in the command squad, and all the tanks as well. Oh man, yeah. I mean, if I won the lottery, yeah, I'd definitely get an army of these, but
yeah. I think the problem is your basic infantry squad is like £78, is it? Something like that.
Yeah, and you're talking a guardsman. This is a guard squad. So yeah. They're not even like, you know, Grey Knights where you think, well, I only need four squads.
Jeez. Good shout. My second choice is a box game that I have yet to take part in, that Jay and Matt have been kind of trying to push me towards, and I, you know, I've been very tempted for months. I would like for Christmas an Adeptus Titanicus maniple of Titans and Knights, probably starting with the Grandmaster edition, but there's a few other knights that I'd like added in there, like the Nemesis Warbringer. So yeah, that's what I would like, a maniple of Titanicus Knights.
That's cool. Well, Dave, there's now a better option than the Grandmaster Edition with just the Adeptus Titanicus starter box. I think it's like £80 maybe, and comes with two Reavers, two Warhounds, and two Knights, plus the full rules. Seems a really good way to get into the game.
Definitely. I need to see you guys play it. I need to see a game in action to really sway me to it.
I think one of my first lockdown projects was getting my Adeptus Titanicus all painted up. So I've got like 2,000 points ready to go now to fight Matt when we can get back around the table.
I've Legio Ignatum are more than 2,000 points now. I've painted a lot of Titans over lockdown, and I've probably got a couple of thousand points worth of Knights as well, so there might be a force that you can have a play with there, Dave.
I really want to try it out, but yeah, if Santa wants to bring me a Titanicus maniple, that'd be grand. Matt, what's your second choice?
So I've gone for something small for my second one, because I've been a bit silly for the third one and the first one. So, you know, we'll rein in a little bit for the second one. So what I'd really, really like off Santa is an intricate, multi-level, 6-foot by 4-foot Zone Mortalis board with masses of detail, multiple levels, a big crane, maybe a train going through the middle of the board as well.
Have the bridge of the Vengeful Spirit in there.
Oh yeah, that sounds amazing. We have all kind of underfloor lighting and smoke machines. Yeah.
Some of the corridors can be like warp touched.
Oh, how good would that be? So yeah, basically we're going for the most expensive, most over the top Zone Mortalis board you have ever seen. Because again, like the other guys I said, we are definitely doing some Horus Heresy next year, and I think Zone Mortalis is a nice entry point into that because you don't need a massive army.
No.
Plus, with all the cool Necromunda stuff that's come out, it'd be really fun to get some games on there.
Yeah.
Totally.
Good choice.
The thing is now, though, Matt, I do actually want a board like that now. That would be really good.
It would be really good.
Fantastic. Jay, what is your second choice?
My second choice, and I don't know whether anyone from Games Workshop listens to our podcast, I don't know, but I might write them a letter. Rules for Valdor in 40K. I was listening to the next book. I can't remember what the title of the book's called, but it's a sequel to Watchers of the Throne. And they mentioned Valdor again and how he's disappeared. No one quite knows what's happened to him. There was that other short story where he took the spear and disappeared. He's still knocking around. you know, Gilliman's back. He's the only Primarch. I think they need a Captain General on their side.
What gives me hope is this is the kind of thing they could do. You know, we've got like the Rust to Rust supplement, the kind of Crusade supplement coming out for 40K, and then the big kind of narrative book along with that. Yeah. Valdor seems to me like the kind of guy who could come with his own, you know, mini expansion.
Oh, that'd be so cool. I don't think we'll get it for Christmas. Maybe next Christmas.
Maybe.
So that brings us round to our top choices. And I was like, right, what is the single most expensive thing on Games Workshop? Because, heck, even if I don't want it, let's just add it in my top three. But then actually, when I found it, I was like, actually, I would really like that. Don't know where it'd go. It'd take me forever to paint, and I'd be dead scared painting it. But I would really like Smaug the Dragon weighing in at £340.
Yeah. I've picked up this box multiple times in Warhammer World, and finally the gold madness has passed. I put it back on the shelf, but my resistance to it drops every time we walk in that store. Now, thankfully, this year we've not been in Warhammer World at all, really, have we?
No, so, we haven't.
I haven't built Smaug, but I'd love to paint up this model. And when you think about it, that's 1,000-point Lord of the Rings army.
Yeah. Yeah, I could take that along to a tournament. So, yeah, I think he's an incredible model, a really nice base, and he'd be the centrepiece of any hobby room, for sure.
For sure.
Matt, what is your top choice?
Well, I had a similar thought and went for, you know, a big, chunky model that I've always wanted. Only it's a little bit more expensive than Smaug, about £1,000 more expensive than Smaug, and it is the 40k scale Warlord Titan.
Yeah,
clocking in at £1,345. And now, to be fair, I've already got a head, so that saves me about £50.
You may as well just buy the rest now.
I may as well. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think I've got any organs I can sell to buy a Warlord Titan. But if I won the lottery, yeah, I'd have a maniple of them.
A maniple.
Maniple of Warlords. It always cracks me up when we go and you see that they've got that table there with the downed Warlord on it. So they've picked it off the shelf, smashed it up, and put it on a board to like. There's people out there that don't even have one Warlord, and you're smashing them up to make scenery.
The most expensive board in the world.
Yeah. Brilliant. I had a feeling the Warlord Titan was going to make an appearance. Jay, what is your top choice?
My top choice, Dave, is for Peace on Terror. But I don't think... I think the way Gilliman's going on in this latest book I'm reading, I don't think there's going to be Peace on Terror for a few thousand years just yet. So if there's not going to be peace on terror, then you're going to need some reinforcements, and I think you're going to need another Primarch. So top of my Christmas list is for another Loyalist Primarch. I don't care who. Well, Sanguinius, obviously, but you know, one that has a realistic chance of coming back. You're looking at the Lion or Russ, aren't you? I guess on the Imperium side.
Jakati Khan's in the fighting pits of the Dark Eldar, isn't he?
About Jakati Khan and Vulcan. We don't know what happens to Vulcan yet. He has
Vulcan lives.
Horus Heresy, yeah.
So yeah, there's actually quite a few contenders for next Loyalist Primarch, aren't there?
Yeah, I think the only one that's out of the running for sure is Ferris Manus and Sanguinius. They're definitely not coming back.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Ferris Manus could come back, just like in Futurama.
Just a head in a jar.
Primarch in a jar.
Awesome. That brings us to the end of our choices for this week's top three. But we have got the community top three to wrap this podcast up coming up next. And here we are in the final segment of this week's podcast. And it's time to read out the community top three picks. So Matt, what have we got over on Twitter?
Well, Immersive starts in epic form. Dear Santa, this year has been tough. I know it's been tough on everyone else too. I've mostly been a very good boy. A smile will be brought to my face on Christmas Day. If you could possibly, maybe, perhaps, gift me with the Out of Production, Forge World, and Fillion project in its entirety. Thanks. So do you remember when the Forge World book came out pitting the Tyranids against the Imperium? You could buy an entire resin space base science lab thing with corridors and different like landing pads and hab units, and yeah, it was a massive
table, didn't it?
And that they were the internal details on the massive complex that you could buy. It was crazy money. I don't know if anyone's got any. If you have, do send us some pictures, because it looked really cool, and I kind of want one now to go next to the Zone Mortalis board.
It'd be incredible. It'd be such a fun thing to play on. It's a shame they don't have one that you can play on at game Warhammer World, because that's
a few things that they haven't got.
Yeah, get it back in production, G Dubs. Yeah, that'd be ace.
Daz Maul says, a Phantom Titan. I made an online wish list a few years ago as a joke with a Titan and two arms in it, and somebody bought me one of the arms. It would be nice to have the rest.
I'm going on to my Forge World wish list now.
I mean, that's pretty good.
What would you prefer, Matt, an arm or a head?
Well, I've got a head. If you get an arm as well, I'm nearly there then, aren't I?
An Imperial head, a Phantom arm, Eldar arm.
Rich Donny Mutant says, a Gene Stealer Patriarch on throne. Now, I was thinking about this. This would be the kind of cool thing you could do as one of these commemorative miniatures. So kind of a callback to the original second edition Gene Stealer Court models.
Yeah.
I think that'd be quite fun. You know, as a Games Day exclusive or something. I think that'd be quite cool. Pete Allison says, more hobby time. Though, a plastic Warhound Titan would be more realistic. Loopy says, Santa, I've been ever so good. I'd like a Forge World Tantalus and a 3D printer. Tantalus is a really nice ship, isn't it?
It is.
Oh, that's the Elbrus, like barge, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And a 3D printer is something that I've toyed with as well, but I think it takes a lot of learning how to use and a lot of cleaning. And at the end of the day, I think it's just quicker to just buy models and paint them at the minute. But you never know how technology goes. G Ambulance Service goes, mold line free models, Forge World Black Friday price slashers, and an AI app that beams onto the tabletop all scores, objectives, dice rolls needed, and abilities. That sounds really cool, doesn't it?
That does sound cool.
That's not far out. I mean, that's going to happen one day. Like Microsoft HoloLens, I remember watching the video of that the first time I saw it, like augmented reality. I think that's, you know, it's not far off that, isn't it?
Imagine being able to glance at your units and see all the stats in your kind of head-mounted display. It'd be ace, wouldn't it? Yeah. And finally, De Greenskins just wants to know where I got the crazy wrapping paper. I don't know. That's my wife's wrapping paper that I used on the photograph. It's got like dolphins and mermaid Santa. It's very bizarre. So yeah, I can't help you with that one. Sorry.
Amazing stuff. Matt, what is next week's top three?
So, next week, the year is coming to an end. So, as is tradition, we want to know your model of the year. We will be collating all these to try and find out the community top model of the year 2020. I think there's a lot of good contenders this year.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. So you can get your choices in via sending us a tweet and using the hashtag SprewsAndBrews, or you can reply to the tweet that Matt will send out either on Sunday or Monday, ready for the week's podcast. And I think, guys, that brings us to the end of another week's episode. We're edging slightly close to Christmas, so it'd be nice to have a bit of a Christmassy episode next week. I might even throw some Christmas music in.
Gonna do that.
Nice and festive. So until then, have a great week at Hobby, and we'll speak to you all again very soon. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Sprues and Brews podcast. Make sure you check out our social media at Sprues and Brews on Twitter and facebook.com/Sprues and Brews. And of course, you can always head over to the website, spruesandbrews.com, for all the latest Warhammer news.